This week's conversation with Jessica Kemper of Field Guide Embroidery is sponsored by the Embroiderers Guild of America and the EGA 2025 National Seminar. And now here's a word from EGA President Lee Peacock.
Hi, this is Lee Peacock, President of the Embroiderers Guild of America. And I would like to invite you to our first ever sampler retreat. Sampler University, or Sampler U, is being hosted in conjunction with the EGA National Seminar and will be held in Dallas, November 15th and 16th. It's two full days of classes with popular teachers Sylvia Stecker of Running with Needle and Threads and Becky Nolan of Lucy Beam. There will be two full kits valued at $300. Lunch will be served on both days. Bespoke swag celebrating Sampler U will be given to all the participants. Registration is real time, so you will know immediately if you and your friends are able to attend. No waiting or wondering if you made the class. There will be access to shopping opportunity and exhibits. Plus, it's in Dallas, which is easily accessible from all parts of the country. And it's open to all EGA members as well as non-members. So how do you find out about this wonderful opportunity? Simply go to egausa.org and look for Sampler U. Register soon and join us in Dallas.
Thanks to the EGA for sponsoring this week's show. And now our conversation with Jessica Kemper of Field Guide Embroidery. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week from Field Guide Embroidery is Jessica Kemper. Jessica, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
In hot and steamy Georgia in early May.
Yeah.
That's not right. There's something wrong there. Something wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jessica's embroidery, obviously, Field Guide Embroidery, but it's outdoor, it's nature, it's embroidering clothes, and then we have a book. And the book, I was able to find some enough pages of it to get the gist of it. Very cool, very cool. So we have outdoors, I'm sensing two loves, outdoors and embroidery. So which comes first?
I think my love for the outdoors, I studied horticulture and environmental studies in college.
Ah.
So I was already predisposed to fall into something like this, I think. I will say I've always loved crafting, though. My partner calls me a serial hobbyist because I jump around from hobby to hobby, get super into one, move to another. But embroidery has really stuck for me. So I think when I started embroidering, I started with flowers and kind of easier things to learn stitches. And then I think from there, my two loves just kind of braided together and ended up being nature-themed embroidery.
Yeah. So are you pretty much self-taught? Your needlework pretty much self-taught?
Yes. I started with a book from the library, and it was it taught you the basic stitches, and I really enjoyed it. I find that I always like to challenge myself to make things more complicated than they need to be. And I was like, I'm going to try to make my own patterns shortly after I learned the basic stitches. So after that, I've learned many more stitches since then, and I would say I'm, self-taught.
Yeah, now see, that puts you in a different channel than most needleworkers, because most will buy designs from others and execute them and are perfectly happy, and not very many make that leap into creating their own designs. So you pretty much started out doing that yourself then, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I followed, I have three pieces that I followed someone else's pattern, and then I was like, I got to make my own. So, yeah.
Well, that's very cool, because, that's for many, that's a huge mental leap, but you're just predisposed to just, I want to do my own thing. And that's really cool. So then, most of what you do is some form of needle painting in some way or another. And so we're using primarily DMC floss for just about everything?
I do, yes. I inherited a couple collections of thread from a few different people who's had like great aunts that passed away, and they had the hobby and they heard that I was into embroidery. So I have a really wide mix of threads, but I stick with the DMC. If I'm buying something, that's where I always go to. Just because it's really high quality. And if I am sharing the pattern with someone, I want it to be easily accessible to them. And DMC does it the best. So,
yeah. Well, and with your clothing, most of it used outdoors, you have to have the color fastness there too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I never worry about any kind of bleeding or anything like that.
Yeah.
It stands up really well. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there an art background in you or?
No,
I'm annoyed. Now I'm annoyed. Because you're creating this stuff without art background. Okay.
I mean, I've always been drawn to doing arts and crafts. But in high school and in college, I really focused on science classes. I never really took any classes. I'm kind of trying some out now. I just signed up for my first watercolor class this summer. One art form of art, I guess, that has really lended itself well to embroidery is wildlife photography. I really enjoy dragging my big camera around when I'm hiking or camping to take pictures of animals. And all of those pictures over the years have really inspired a lot of the patterns that I make for my embroidery now.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Now we're on the same wavelength, because I don't do it much anymore. But many, many years, I was up before sunrise with camera, tripod, and all the gear out photographing. Animals weren't really my thing. It was plants.
And
macro
cool.
photography. And, oh, yeah, many, many hours out in open fields photographing what to most people are weeds. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. It's great fun.
That's such a fun hobby. It is. Oh, yeah. It really is. It's so rewarding, too.
Yeah. And the world at that time of day is just so peaceful.
It's different, yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yep. Okay. All right. I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. Yep. You bet. So are you doing, you're using some of that then for your designs, at least for sample images to build your designs?
Yes. I have a big collection of wildlife photography, I really like that when I do look through my photos, it takes me back to that moment in time of like a backpacking trip in the Tetons. I took this gorgeous photo of a yellow-bellied marmot on a rock at sunset. And I feel like in looking back at those photos and using them for my embroidery patterns, it's not only a picture of this marmot that other people might connect with, but it's kind of a piece of me going into that artwork as well. Like there's a deeper emotion and feeling to it than just a marmot, which I think is very cool. And it's very rewarding for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's neat. So then, so photography is kind of becoming the starting point for your art. And you talk about watercolor, that smells to me like the photos are going to be reference photos for some watercolor paintings.
We'll see. Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah. Interesting. And that watercolor, you got to share as you get going. You got to share how you do. The first time I saw serious watercolor, because I could never figure out how watercolor artists get such deep colors as opposed to that kind of semi-transparent, lame color. And I was doing some work at the Field Museum in Chicago. And in the same massive room with me was a lady doing a watercolor class of insects. And, of course, they had a billion samples of insects. So, students could just go pick one off the shelf and do it. And so, of course, I'm supposed to be doing this. I'm helping somebody out with a collection of coral. And I wander over to see what they're doing and discovered that it's all layering. To get the deep color. And what a fascinating world. And so they'd paint over here a little bit, and while that's drying, they're painting over here in the other corner. And Oh, I bet you're going to have fun. Yeah.
That sounds like a dream class. That sounds awesome.
Oh, they I mean, these were serious students. You could tell they'd been doing it for a while. They were doing Beatles that had a shine to them, and yeah, the whole bit. So, you're okay. A serial hobbyist. Here she comes. Yes. Next one. excellent. Wow. So you got it all working then. You've got the photography is going to give you the material you need. That's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when is it that you say, wait a minute, I can embroider on clothing. I can embellish clothing and make it look, because that's not always easy to do either.
Yeah. So I studied environmental studies in college. And then I went on to be a sustainability professional in my career. And I feel like I've been someone who is always conscious of sustainability efforts and reusing what's already here. So my adventure in embroidery started with going to the thrift store and buying flannel shirts that still had a lot of life left in them, and fixing them up, embroidering something awesome on them, and then reselling them and donating part of the proceeds back to a wildlife nonprofit. So I think from the beginning, I was interested in using materials that already existed here, and trying to keep clothing, one of the biggest things in the landfill, out of the landfill. So that has been really cool for me. And I kind of then molded to do more hats and other things besides flannel shirts, but those are still something that I really enjoy to do.
That's still your core, huh? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, I love them.
There was this quote you had: I started embroidering to fill a hole, a needed purpose, a way to process my eco grief. And I love that word, eco grief. I don't know that it's actually a word, but you made it a word. but it is so descriptive of that mentality and that approach then. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. So I started embroidering in 2020, March 2020, when everyone was looking for a hobby, something to do. Yes. Something to keep your mind off of the news and make yourself feel good. So I started embroidering then. And I feel like on top of eco grief, things that I was already facing in my daily job in sustainability, I was feeling all this other pressure and anxiety of what's going on in the world. And it just manifested. And I, again, going back to those photos that I would look back at and feel back in that moment, I really feel like in doing that, it would bring me a lot of joy and kind of help relieve some of that anxiety, going back to those moments and reliving them and remembering that those things exist in the world was really nice.
And see, and that's so cool because we have talked many, many times throughout the years on shows about the mental aspect of needlework and the calming influence it has. And it just lets it just drain out of you. So you experience that and still do. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it lends itself well to a lot of emotions. You can be feeling sad and it makes you feel better to do happy flowers and happy animals. It's kind of nice when you're really angry because you get to stab something a million times.
Yep.
It's nice. Yeah. If you're feeling down, I feel like artwork in general, not just embroidery, it just makes you feel calmer and better.
Yeah. Yeah. It has that effect. It's amazing. And you can feel it happen. Mm-hmm. When you sit down, you can feel it happen. And 15 minutes later, you feel a whole lot better than you did when you sat down. Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You may have to go back and pull a few stitches out because they're a little snug. But, yeah.
It happens to us all. Yeah.
I've had that too. Yep. So sustainability says go to the thrift store and get some shirts and do it. Did you start doing it for friends or when did the selling of stuff come?
That's a good question. I did make a few pieces for friends and family for like Christmas gifts and things. Got good feedback on them. I just kept going. I feel like I'm someone, like I took a pottery class once and I ended up with so much pottery that didn't really have a lot, like I didn't know what to do with it all. And that's how embroidery was too. I just started collecting all these shirts. It's like, I don't know what to do with these. So I made an Instagram account, started sharing them. I found that people also started to connect with them and would start sharing their own wildlife sighting stories with me, which was really cool. And I feel like started to build a community too. Like I could post a grizzly bear and someone would message me and say like, oh, you're never going to believe this story when I saw a grizzly bear. Someone I never met before telling me like a really personal story, which I just think is so cool. So, people started to offer to buy my work and I was like, okay, I guess I should like try to do this. And it went well. I did my first in-person market and I feel like this was a really popular market in Salt Lake City, that my friends would put on and people would line up around the block to come in right before the doors opened. Wow. And the doors opened and people were just flying past my booth, like going to other artists and things. And I was like, oh no. But like someone stopped, they saw a mountain goat on a flannel and they were like, I need that shirt because I saw this mountain goat with my dad hiking like years ago. And it's just such a good memory for me. And that was like cemented it for me. Like, I'm going to keep doing this. This is very cool.
Because there's that deeper connection than just here's a mountain goat embroidered on a shirt.
Right. Yeah. Meaning, yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that takes some guts to set up a booth at something like that. That must have been a little nerve wracking right out of the gate. Like
I was very nervous. It ended up being amazing, though, and encouraged me to keep going.
Yeah. Do you still do those?
So when I lived in Salt Lake City, yes, I had a really good community there. And I still do a lot of, I would say half the orders that I make and sell go back to Salt Lake City. And then I moved to Atlanta 2 years ago and I feel like I'm still trying to get my feet underneath me, trying to find my niche, and the markets that work best for me. That's really what, had me write the book for the most part, was I was missing that community. Like, how can I connect with people even when I'm so far away from all of my friends? And I was like, I started teaching classes, which has been really fun too. And then I wrote a book.
Yeah. Okay. So I missed that in the research then. So classes, are you doing live or online or both?
I teach live classes. Yes. I teach, I've been teaching a little over a year now. I teach intro to embroidery where we just learn as many stitches as we can in the amount of time, usually around 15 stitches over 6 weeks. And then I teach a native wildflowers of Georgia class, and we focus on native wildflowers. And then I also teach an intermediate class.
Good tie-in to the title. Yeah, that's excellent. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I also teach an intermediate class, which is like a hoop and a scene of a black bear walking through Appalachian mountains. So I try to localize it and I try to make it really unique to like kits that you can buy online and watch videos for. So I try to make the classes like something that you can't get anywhere else and people have loved them. So it's been really great.
Well, that's great. And I'm confident you've met several people just through that. That starts to build that community. Yeah.
Yes. Great people. Really great people.
So is that in your house or do you use a library? How do you go about that?
We have a couple of really great art centers around Atlanta. Yes, I teach at the Chastain Art Center and the Abernathy Art Center, and they're both wonderful.
Excellent. Excellent. So you have room to put up tables and spread people out. Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. So I assume you've had repeat customers like the intro and then they take the next one.
And then the next one. Yep. Yeah.
Outstanding.
It's been great.
Outstanding. Yeah. Do you feel when you're doing that kind of a thing, do you feel a constant pressure to create new, or are you able to get enough mileage out of what you've already done that you're not always trying to churn something else out?
That's a good question. The intro and the native wildflowers have had good traction. I feel like I'm always getting new people in those classes because they're both beginner classes. Yeah. The intermediate one, I think people are kind of, I don't think it's pressure from anywhere outside except for myself of like, I need to keep making new patterns to keep my classes going. I haven't hit like an actual wall where like, okay, I need to make new patterns, but I like to make new patterns for people. Yeah. So kind of both. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I figured it was an internal pressure because the people wouldn't know the difference, but you do.
I don't want people to get bored. Yeah.
Right. So what is your process for creating, say a piece for the book? Is it an illustration? Is it sketchbook time and then convert that, or do you stitch and then sketch?
I used to draw everything by hand. I recently upgraded, well, I guess not super recently, like in the last 2 years, upgraded to an iPad, and I used the app Procreate. And it's very nice because I'm able to upload an old photography photo right there and then draw the line drawing and pattern next to it. And it's nice to have that. And if you make mistakes, it's so easy to just erase it, and you can print it right off on your stabilizer as many times as you need to without having to redraw it and cut them out and start stitching from there.
Okay. All right. So, all right. Now Procreate, I've actually played with a little bit, and I didn't get very far into the learning curve, and I didn't have
it's
a
hard.
Real need for it. Yeah. And
yeah.
I could tell it was going to take a minute. So, mm-hmm. so you're able to put on the screen then the photograph and then draw, you're not tracing over it, you're drawing next to it?
Yes. For photos that I have taken and I own, I will trace sometimes
okay.
the faces or some more difficult aspects of it. If I am supplementing with free photos from online or something, I try my best not to trace it exactly because I want it to be unique to myself
yeah.
and I want to create my own things. But yeah. Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm so glad to hear that because just recently, last couple of days, there's been some things I've read, needlework artists, copyrights, and please buy your own copy. So it's
mm-hmm.
good to hear that you're sensitive to that because it's we all need to be. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah,
there's too much theft, too much theft, and people don't view it. Yeah, people know darn well that they should buy their own copy, but I don't
mm-hmm.
think they view it as theft, and it's frustrating. Yeah,
yeah,
because you guys should get paid for what you do. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not easy work all the time. Yeah. So then when it comes to, so we have this piece, you're ready to stitch it. Have you planned the colors all along, or is that now yet to come? And do you try to stay true to the photograph, or is there some artistic license there?
Yes. So my work, I would say, tries to stay as true to the biological form as possible.
Okay.
Like I want it to look like it's straight out of a field guide sort of thing. That's what I try to do. So it is sometimes going to the craft store with my photo and
yeah.
lining it up along the shelves and seeing which brown is closest. I did buy, DMC has like a fold out guide
right.
with like little samples of all the threads. So I bought one of those. So now I don't have to leave my house to do it. And I can pick out my colors and then order them. Yeah, that's been really nice. That's the most fun, but also stressful part. Because I feel like if the brown is a little bit off, I don't know if anybody else cares besides me, but I like it to look as close to the real form as possible.
Okay, so you sweat over that then, getting the right,
yeah.
just the right
yeah.
brown or blue
yeah.
or whatever. Yeah, okay.
I do, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, and everybody should have the DMC actual thread
mm-hmm.
color chart. Those are
there's yeah. it's really useful. Yeah.
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 Yeah. I say, I mean, I don't design. Heaven knows I don't design, but I have one, and it's amazing how many different times that comes in handy when you don't even think about it. And
yeah,
and you
yeah.
go, boy, you know, if I had a chart with all the colors, and yes, I do. It's right here.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I will often forget to write down what color I used for something. And it's like, oh, I actually really need to know. And you can just look up in the guide and set
yep.
them next to each other and figure it out. It's really nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would recommend that.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody should buy that. And it's frustrating. They're not always available. And so when they're available.
No, they're not. Yeah. I got lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. When they're available, you jump on it. Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I've never understood that. I'm sure they're a pain to make. I'm sure that making those things is just labor intensive and.
Probably.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah. But you'd think they'd have them in stock all the time, but they don't.
People want them. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to jump on it. So then what about instructions? The bane of all designers, instructions. Do you find
mm-hmm.
that annoying, or do you write them as you go, or how does that work for you?
I would say a lot of my patterns use very similar stitches because I'm doing a lot of mammals that have fur. So it's kind of a very similar approach to most of my patterns. So it's pretty easy in my book to say, here are five types of stitches. This is how you approach almost all of the patterns. And if there's any anomalies, they have little notes. So I was also advised, like, there are so many resources out there for embroidery, YouTube channels and other books that just talk about instructions. Like, let's put our focus on the patterns here. And people can go elsewhere to watch resources if they need them. So luckily for me, sharing instructions has not been too complicated. I would eventually, it's my dream to start my own YouTube channel. And show the way that I stitch and the way that I embroider, because I think everybody does it a little bit differently. So that's a goal for myself in the future.
Yeah, there's no right or wrong way. It just
gets exactly.
The way you want. Yeah. No, and seeing some of the pages from your book, and we'll get to that book in a second. You just basically point to areas and say this color, this stitch, and fill it in. And but your designs are such that you can do that and people can just, fill this area with a stitch.
Absolutely. Yeah. I find that in my classes, people either love that or hate it. I want people to have the creative freedom to make it look how you would make it look. But there are people out there who say, like, tell me exactly where to put the stitches. So we'll see how the book is received. Cause it does say, like, this big section of fur, like, you just have to fill it in with stitches.
Right.
You just got to do it.
Yep.
So we'll see. Yeah.
Well, I thought, while those instructions are kind of sparse, but then I thought, what more could you say? This is an area here. It needs to be brown. Fill it in, stitch it in. Yeah. Okay. I got to ask about this fur stitch. I don't know fur stitch. This is your creation?
I guess so. Yes. I think so. I don't want to say I created it because I'm sure there are many people out there who do something very similar, if not the same, but I didn't know what to call it because I feel like it's a mix between straight stitches and the long short stitch and the seed stitch. Like, we're trying to make the fur not all look exactly the same. You kind of want it to look ruffled, like a wild animal would look.
Right.
So that's the way that I describe it, is it's a mix of this stitch, and this stitch. And you just kind of have to use your creative freedom and try to make it look like fur.
Okay. All right. Because it does, I couldn't tell from the photos, there's not enough detail there. But you do get a texture there that is very different from normal embroidery stitches. So it works. It works. Yeah. Yeah. It's got that lumpy kind of hairy feel to it. Yeah. It's okay. You made it up. That's
yes.
All right.
Yeah. Yep. I did.
Yep. The Jessica Kemper fur stitch.
Fur stitch.
But it works. And then you, because you're animals, then you're using that all the time. I mean, it was everywhere.
That's the primary stitch in the book. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. There are, like, when you do a bird or a fish or something, you don't really want it to have the same look. So that one is more of like a straight stitch, but all the mammals for the most part use the fur stitch.
Yeah. Now you have some kits. You have some kits with hats and I buy the kit and I get the hat too. Tell me about learning to stitch on a hat, because that, I mean, normally that's pretty thick, especially the front piece there. A lot of experimenting, a lot of sore thumbs and digit fingers?
some hats are easier than others to stick it through that middle seam. For tough ones, I use a thimble on my finger. I, at this point, have a permanent callus on my middle finger where I use to push the needle through. So I do forget. I used that kit to teach a class. And when they got to the middle seam, they were like, ouch, this really hurts. And I was like, oh yeah, that's right. So we got thimbles and everyone did fine after that. But, I do use a needle. I use a size 5 DMC needle for pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's a little bit bulkier than other needles. It makes it easier to push through tough things, because I'll do like jean jackets or things like that too, where it's, I did a leather bag once, and that was hard.
Whoa. Oh boy.
It really hurt my fingers. But I mean, it's doable, but yeah, thimbles and a thicker needle.
Yeah. Okay.
My recommendation.
Right. Ooh, leather. I didn't even think of leather. Oh boy.
Yeah.
Ouch. Ouch. Yeah. So do you back those, like on the hat, do you have put some kind of a backing on there to protect the stitching?
That's a good question. When I first started, yes, I used a stabilizer that you iron on the back. At this point, no. I've found that because my embroidery is like a million little stitches, it really holds together all of the loose ends.
Okay.
Additionally, I never knot my thread when I pull it through. To hold it on the back, I instead take the tail and I weave it underneath another thread to hold it down. My husband has a hat that I made for him probably 3 or 4 years ago now, and he runs a lot and wears that hat, and it has gone through the washing machine probably 50 times. He's like the person who figured out that if you don't actually follow any directions for embroidery, it turns out fine still. So it still looks great. Yeah.
It held up without anything on the back then. Okay.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
I've never really had problems with any threads coming loose or anything with the way that I embroider or my patterns.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, most of these designs are relatively small things. They can't be more than a couple of inches. Do you do bigger designs like that you frame, or are you just happy doing the smaller ones?
I love to do the little tiny ones. That's why you see them the most. But I have done, I've done a couple of jackets where it's like on the back panel, like a whole barn owl flying or a whole turkey vulture flying. There's a photo of that in my book, of like a big turkey vulture. I don't often do big pieces, though. I like to be able to finish a piece in a week.
Okay.
Basically.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. A lot to be said for that. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. The book. So what started the book? Where did that come from? I mean, that's next level. All right. Now I'm going to put a book together of all kinds of designs. What made that trip in your head?
Yeah, I think a few different influences commingled in my head to make me think of this. But one of them was, again, moving and like, how can I connect broader with the community that likes both nature and embroidery? Part of that was hearing stories from people of how they really connected with something that I made, a moose or a grizzly bear or whatever. I thought that would be neat to be able to empower them to do their own artwork and take their own stories and create art. Trying to kind of share that message of like, this is a way that you can work through some of your emotions around eco grief, et cetera. So trying to share that on a broader scale. And then I actually did have a little bit of a run-in with someone doing a very similar pattern to my own. And it kind of felt like it was a little too close, and I thought, you know what, I should put my name on these and get paid for it. So I wrote a book.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. So the Field Guide to Embroidery. So then it's a collection, because what you have, seven groupings of animals in here. That's a pretty broad range, because there's what, desert, mountain, waterways, forest, ocean, prairie, and urban. And the urban one, it was like, what's she doing with urban?
Yeah. And
so I do have, what animals do we have in the urban thing? I assume we have a raccoon or?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, I included the urban chapter because I really wanted to be inclusive of people who maybe can't get out to the Appalachian Trail and do bird watching, who maybe just bird watch at their local park or out their window at work in their high rise building or whatever. So I really wanted to be inclusive. There is a raccoon, there's a red fox, which, so I should preface all of this and say that these animals are categorized by the association I make of where they live.
Okay.
So like a turkey vulture, you can see many, many places. But the first time that I saw one was in the desert in Arizona, and that really stuck with me. So yeah. I think of turkey vultures as being desert animals, whereas someone else who's lived in the Southeast their whole life would think like, oh, that's like a marsh bird or whatever, you know? So,
yeah, right.
So the red fox, I'm trying to think what else. I have it here. A gull. Oh, maybe that one is in the ocean. A coyote, a raccoon, a garter snake, a fox. Oh, the gull is in urban. A skunk. Yeah.
Oh, of course. Yes.
A skunk and a red-tailed hawk.
Oh, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. I can see all those working. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Yep. Because my first thought was, all right, dog, cat, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So then, how do we have in there animals that are endangered too, right? So you're able to make a statement there with some endangered animals, which I thought was good.
Yeah. Yes. When I started all of this, I wanted to. I probably do it less now than I did then, but maybe I'll get back to it. Focusing really closely on endangered and threatened species, trying to bring more awareness to them and the effects of climate change on their lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Important. Yeah. Yeah. So take me through that book process. You have an idea for a book. How far did you go before you started looking for a publisher?
Not very far. Most of the publishers want you to write a proposal. I think mine ended up being 3 or 4 pages. Mm-hmm. Really with your idea and why you want to write the book and why you're qualified to write the book on this topic.
Uh-huh.
So once you have that, and a bunch of pictures of your work, of course, they're all a little bit different, but that's pretty much the gist of it. You then send that out to as many publishers as you'd like to, and see what they think.
Yeah. And of course, rejection after rejection, and then you get one.
What's even worse is they don't contact you at all. You don't get a rejection.
Yeah. Come on.
They're busy. They get a lot, I'm sure.
Come
but
on.
I got very lucky. I got very lucky that one, Schiffer Publishing, who is awesome, liked my proposal.
Oh, come on. Form. Just a form email. Fire it off.
Yeah.
Right. Jeez. Oh, come on. It's 2025. You can at least do that much.
Jeez. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So then, okay. So then, all right. So you've got this proposal. Now you mm-hmm. got to deliver a book. Is it a collaboration with the people at Schiffer to put this together? Now you got a bunch of designs you either have or you have to come up with. And then I assume that they're helping you put it together so it's going to read right, look good. They've got artists, layout artists, I'm sure that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I when I sent in my proposal, it was really, truly like the barest minimum. Like I have this idea. So after they said like, oh, we would be interested, you sign the contract and then it's up to you to figure it all out for the patterns anyway. So I spent a summer, I only gave myself 3 months to do the 52 patterns. I had to get an extension of a month. So after 4 months, then I was finished. My editor at Schiffer, Sandra, loves field guides and also loves nature. And she was really wonderful to work with. And she really saw my vision and really empowered me to be myself in writing this book. So she was really wonderful and she, had great ideas. So we collaborated a lot on, the design of the book. Yes. They put together like the really beautiful pages and the styling all of the patterns and everything. They did such a good job. Yeah, they did a really great job. It does have the feel of a field guide, which is exactly what I wanted.
No complaints. Okay, so, because that was the one thing in this process I often wonder is when it's done, do you feel like it's your book, like it's you, it's your personality, it's you, as opposed to what they think will sell?
For me, I will say like 100% my book is me.
Okay.
And I definitely did go through the thought process, like, are people going to buy this if it's me, you know,
right.
like that's,
right.
I almost feel like I I never regretted it, but like, did I make this too personal? Because if people don't like it, like it's gonna hurt.
Ouch.
But yes, I do feel like when they sent me the first copy of it, it really felt like how you can go online and you like Walgreens.com and you can make those like photo books.
Yeah.
Like with your vacation photos or whatever. It felt like that. Like this is a book that I made just for myself.
Uh-huh.
And when people started to get copies of it, I was like, oh gosh, this is so crazy. It feels so strange that people are reading like this book that I made for myself.
Yeah.
But thankfully it's been very well received so far, and people are already making projects and it's been really great.
Oh, that's going to be the fun part as you see more of those projects show up. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, your design that somebody, yeah. And what they did with it color-wise, how they stitched it. Yeah, all those things. Yep. So what does it feel like to have when that book comes, the bound up printed version of the book comes to your in your mail? It's got to be pretty exciting.
It is definitely the most exciting part of it. Yes. My publisher included like a really nice bottle of wine and a really nice thank you note, and it felt emotional to open it, because I think at that point it took 2 years from start to finish, start to publish date. And I think I got the finished book maybe a year into the process. And then a year until it was, I don't know, maybe closer to a couple months ago. But yes, it felt like a lot of work that went into it, and it felt really cool. Yeah, to open it and see it.
Yeah. Oh, and to share with family members and friends. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's got to be so much fun. Yeah. Look what I did. Now, hold that book up, because it looks like it's a good sized hardbound book. It's not just some little 20-page pamphlet.
No.
Thing. That's a serious deal.
Like this.
Yeah.
It is very dense too. Like 52 patterns, I feel like is a lot to have in a book.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
So I really feel like people who are interested in embroidery, whether you're a beginner or advanced, if you have any inclination towards nature, like there's a cool pattern in there for everyone.
Now, and we can get this. I found it on Amazon because, yeah, you know, why not? But we can get this in bookstores from your website.
Correct. Yep. It's on my website and anywhere else you can buy books.
Yeah. Okay. And when was it made available for sale?
April 28th.
Oh, so we're right at the beginning of this then. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Yay. Yeah. So we got some signing events. I mean, how do you promote this thing? Do they help you with that?
It's kind of up to you. Schiffer is really supportive of anything that you'd like to do to promote your book, of course, to sell more copies. And also to empower you to feel good about your book. I haven't signed up for any yet. I guess I'm nervous, but I would really like to. I've reached out to a couple of local bookstores here to talk about my book. And we also have like a creative reuse center here in Atlanta. It's kind of like a thrift store for craft materials. And I'd really like to reach out to them and see if we can do something together. So yeah. I will say not really yet. But I would like to.
Yeah. Well, I would think that, and back to Salt Lake City too, you know, road trip. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
but I mean, even that, you talk about community, what fun to have an evening with people and with your book at the center of it and talk about the designs. And yeah, that's.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be fun, yeah. So we've got the book and you've got kits. What lies ahead for us now? You got more designs, more kits, teaching?
Yes. Yep. I will continue teaching my classes. I really love those. I continue to do my own collections of work that I've made of patterns that are not in the book and selling those works. I'd like to participate in a couple in-person markets here in Atlanta and maybe more books down the road. So,
yeah. Yeah. With summer coming up, do we have trips in mind to get new material?
Yeah, I think so. My husband and I, we have two rescue dogs, and we really like to
Wow.
travel around with them and do little things and go running together and camping and et cetera.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think we'll get out and about this summer. It's so hot here in the south. It'd be nice to actually travel north to get out of it for a little bit. So, yeah.
Oh yeah, I know how hot and humid it gets down there. Well, I live in St. Louis and it gets nasty here,
Oh,
so
you know.
So after all this experience, another book you, or some
I would
people
like
are
to, yes.
okay. All right. So
Yeah.
you're in that camp then. Not oh, I got that done, I'll never do it again, but
I think so. I think so. I was trying to hold off to make a decision. Well, I mean, no decision is promised because it's up to the publisher, but I was trying to make a decision about whether I should submit another proposal once this book came out because I wanted to make sure that I truly loved the experience, and I really did. So I think I will try to pursue that option in the future, and if not, that's okay too. Still having fun embroidering, yeah.
Well, and that's just it. It's such a long haul. I mean, almost 2 years from concept to printed book. I mean, there's just so much that goes into it. Even after the design phase, I mean, the whole, or the, creating your own, creating the designs, but just to put the book together, get a design, proofread 1,000 times, I'm sure.
The promotion is the hard part for me. I have a hard part or a hard time talking, like trying to convince people to buy it. Like that is hard for me to talk about myself and promote it. So thank you for having me on the podcast because I feel like that
Glad to do it. I'm glad you did it. Yeah. No, I know that feeling. That is it's not always second nature for people to everywhere they go want to talk about their book. And
Right.
in many ways that's almost what you have to do. But yeah, I know what you mean. I'm not always comfortable with that either. It's like no. Somebody brings it up, yeah, we'll talk about it all day, but
Right. Yeah. I'm not just going to open my introduction with that.
I mean, I'm the same way with the podcast. I'm not hitting people with it all the time. If it comes up, yeah, we'll talk about it. But and of course for me, a male in a female world, the stitching podcast is kind of a weird thing for
I think
most
it's
people
very
anyway.
cool. Yeah, I
So
think it's very cool.
hey, whatever. I got to a point where I was old enough I didn't care anymore.
There
Whatever.
you go. I love it.
And then oh, and then the other part is your the Sageland Collaborative. Talk about your 10% of your sales, because this is not just money for Jessica. This is you're helping the cause here.
Yeah. I would love to talk about them because they're amazing. It's a nonprofit located in Salt Lake City. I used to work at a bird zoo in Salt Lake City, and they had a program where you could essentially do like a research project outside of work if it benefited birds. So I partnered with a wildlife biologist there, Mary, who wrote a very nice review of my book. And she helped me work through a project about sage grouse that live out in Salt Lake and in the West. And I have just been following their work since. They do amazing work for the wildlife species in the West in general and the habitats. So I really, really like to donate some of the proceeds of what I make back to them because I feel like although it's going to this organization, it's going directly back to the animals that I use in my artwork. So it feels like I'm paying a small portion of my own money back to them to thank them, hopefully.
And so the Sageland, Sageland Collaborative, and they're in Salt Lake City.
That's where they're headquartered, yes. But they work all around the West now.
Okay. I'll look up the website for them and put that in the show notes so people can
Oh,
connect
that'd be
with them.
awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm sure they'll take donations other than from you. Yeah.
Definitely.
I'm,
They
that's just a
definitely will. They
guess.
need them.
That's just a guess that they will.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, Jessica, that is so cool. Good for you. Bravo, bravo. That's fantastic. So it's Field Guide Embroidery, and she has a Facebook page and Instagram page. And Instagram is where I found you because that's, all the
That's my big
pictures.
one. Yeah.
Yeah, all the
Yep.
pictures. So check her out, Field Guide Embroidery, or Now here, field guide to embroidery. And if you want to embroider clothes, learn how to do that and need some designs of animals, this is a book that will help you do that. Jessica, bravo for you. Congratulations. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you so much, Gary. It's been a pleasure.
Yep. All right. And thanks to everyone for listening.